Welcome back to the Bonfire Podcast, where we talk about the UFC and mixed martial arts with those closest to the fight game. I am your host, longtime MMA reporter and MMA junkie senior reporter, Mike Bon. We are back, folks. A little break from the show, the longest break, in fact, since we started it, but it was for good reason. Your boy got married. Boom, there it is for you on the video side of the show. You can see the wedding ring. We did it. Had an amazing time. Thank you to everyone who reached out, left a nice comment on the beautiful photos I shared on Instagram. What an unforgettable day. Could not be more happy to have married my new bride, Ashley. So well-deserved time off, gave me a little time to recharge, refresh, but we are back here and have a great show in store today. We are going to look a little bit back at the fallout of Terrence Crawford and Canelo Alvarez, and more so the connection between Crawford and Ilia Topuria in the fallout of that fight. A little look at Noche UFC, Diego Lopez, how he shook up the featherweight division and where things stand in terms of who is going to be next for Alexander Volkanovski. And then we are going to discuss the most intriguing UFC fighters of 2025 so far. And joining me to do that will be UFC welterweight, UFC commentator, the Ultimate Fighter winner, a returning guest of the program, Michael Chiesa. A great time had with him chatting about all this stuff and more. And yeah, we want to kind of look in a little bit below the very upper tier of the sport, who we talk so much about this program, champions, title challengers, title fights and everything. Who do we find the most interesting and intriguing? And the caveat with that is it can't be a champion, can't be a former champion, can't be a likely next title contender or scheduled next title contender, and can't be anyone who just fought for a belt. So some names getting some shine here today who maybe typically don't get as much discussion here on the Bonfire. A good topic, I thought, for a UFC off week. Of course, those in the United States celebrating Labor Day. So I thought this is a good time to do this type of show, something not necessarily connected all the way through to an upcoming event or just a past event. So I hope you all enjoyed that. Welcome back. I appreciate all you bearing with me during the time off. I'll take a quick break here and then be back with Michael Chiesa. Back here on the Bonfire, returning guests of the show, it is Michael Chiesa, UFC commentator, UFC welterweight, UFC commentator though. Mike, I think the last time or the first time I had you on the show, we were saying like, in 2025, are you going to get a shot in Contender Series? You said, yes, it's going to come my way. You did it. You've had it a couple weeks recently. Tell me about that to start.
Man, it's been awesome. The first one was planned. The second one, Paul actually had his flight canceled out of France, so out of Paris. So they called me on short notice. And of course, I'm always going to be readily available for opportunities like that. And man, it's just awesome. It's surreal, dude. Like my dream was to always be a UFC fighter. And it was John Anik that planted the seed on Tough, like that I needed to get into broadcasting. It's something I should look into. And something I didn't have as part of my plan, I guess you could say my bingo card headed into my fighting career, but man, it's something I'm super passionate about. It's it reminds me of that run, that chase of just becoming a UFC fighter. Like that's how I feel like I'm doing that again, but instead of becoming a UFC fighter, I'm in the chase to become a UFC commentator, and I feel like I'm getting really close.
You can tell you're really well prepared. I thought you did an amazing job both times. I mean, the second time, to how much notice did you have? Like a few hours or a day? Or
I had a little over a day. So I got the call Sunday late in the morning. And I had like some obligations at home, so I couldn't completely drop everything. But dude, I love it. I always joke with my colleagues that I love when it gets chaotic. I love when it's like, we can't do something recorded, we got to do it live, something on short notice. Like I feel like I kind of thrive in those chaotic moments. I think it makes it more fun. It makes it more interesting. I like that feeling like I'm getting shot out of a cannon, so it's been fun, man. It's been great. I get to do episode 10. So I'm like super stoked that I'm like getting some consecutive reps doing Contender Series. And then I'm also doing, I have two more UFC BJJ shows. I work for BFL and then recently forged a relationship with CFFC. So from now until December 12th, I think I have like 12 shows altogether, bro. So business is booming. I love being in the space, but let's not forget I'm still a competitor. So hopefully we'll have some fight news probably next year.
Okay. Yeah. So you think you're done for 2025 for fighting?
I don't know if I'm, here's the problem. Just off the top of my head, I have CFFC BJJ this weekend. Next weekend I'm in Perth. I come home for a day and then I'm at UFC BJJ. Then I head to Tampa for CFFC on the 10th. And then I leave From there, I have Contender Series, the 14th, and then I have BFL, the 16th, and then I have UFC Vancouver. So, you know, that five-week stretch, would it be really smart for me to try to navigate a camp? It's one thing if it's like I get to train for a couple weeks and do a desk show. That's easy. But when it's like literally I'm going to be – I don't have a weekend at home for the next five weekends, you know. Yeah, so that gives you – so it just would be – it wouldn't be smart. And I want fights that interest me, man. I only got so many left. Especially like I landed a UFC commentating contract. That's a sign the end is near, you know, and I'll always be a competitor, but like, I got to save some of this for this, you know, right. Like I can't have the best of both worlds. So, realistically, you know, I'll probably fight out this deal and be done, but who knows, man, I might rattle off a few more wins in a row, 6-fight win streak, get back in the rankings. And then we're having a different conversation. So right now the focus is broadcasting. So 2026 will be my return most likely.
Yeah. Is there any chance it goes like the opposite way? Like suddenly your January to March looks like this stretch coming up and then it keeps stacking like that. And you're like, well, like this is just coming so consistently. Like I can't even find time for a camp.
Yeah. You know, that's, it'll come, you know, by all means, like if this picks up and I got a UFC, let's say 2026 starts and they're like, hey, we're putting you on UFC commentary. We're shutting everything else down. Is you're just exclusive with UFC and I get to stay busy. You know, that doesn't mean that necessarily like, oh, well, I'm not ever going to fight again. I'm still want to fight at least two more times. I want to fight out my contract at least. But I do know this, Mike, that like, there are times when I'm trying to, I want to have my foot in the door before I'm done competing. So it's like, I've had these moments in my career where I've taken a break just to focus on broadcasting to where I don't have to turn down any shows. I can take them as they come. And I kind of had that set as a plan after the Court McGee fight. It's like 3 fights in 10 months. Let's take a little hiatus where I stay training, stay active, recoup my body a little bit, but also I'm wanting to get my foot in the door in the broadcasting space because when I'm done, I want to hit the ground running. I don't want to be done and be like, okay, now I got to kind of figure this out again. Or I want to be polished by the time I'm fully committed to commentary. So this is just kind of part of my plan. It's a lot easier when you don't have the number next to your name. There's an obligation that you have to consistently fight. You have to defend your spot. So it's a little easier for me to just kind of come and go as a competitor for the next, you know, couple of years, however long this lasts.
Yeah, kind of getting the best of both worlds. Have they given any insight of what things could look like when the page turns to 2026 with the Paramount deal, like for talent?
Not yet. You know, I'm not sure. So we'll see what happens. I'm just assuming that, you know, it'll just be business as usual, just not going to be holding those ESPN microphones anymore. You know, we'll be working for Paramount Plus. And I'm excited, dude. I think that this is going to be a really fun time in the sport, you know. The UFC always seems to be the person that comes out front and makes these big changes and no more pay-per-view, still doing numbered events, you know, more money to get spread around the company to the fighters, to the staff, especially the staff. I mean, you think about what they just had to pull off this last weekend with Noche and, the Crawford Canelo fight, like yeah. Everybody in the production side of things, I'm not just saying this for like the broadcasters, but to everybody on the production side, they should be making 10 times the money after everything yeah. They just did this weekend, man. They between Noche last year, Noche this year, Canelo Crawford, I mean, they are just rolling, man. So, more money to be spread around means a better product. So that's the only thing I can anticipate for 2026 when things change from ESPN to Paramount Plus is somehow, some way, they're going to find a way to make this product even better than it already is. So it'll be fun. Well,
hopefully all that, all those people working in production enjoy this week off. No event on Saturday. So I know there's Contender Series, but yeah, got definitely a well-deserved break. And I know Dana, after the deal was announced, like said, we basically have nothing figured out. This deal came together very quick. So I imagine these are the off weeks and the times where maybe some things actually get figured out what this is going to look like come 2026, but exciting times for sure. And just last thing on the commentary, I'm sure you listened back or got feedback on your Contender Series appearances. What did you like? What did you not like about maybe what you did in there in the booth?
Well, surprisingly, you know, I just thought I was going to get smoked on Twitter just because you can just anticipate that. But I got a lot of good feedback from the fans, which really felt really good, man. Obviously, you know, Laura and Dan and Brandon Fitzgerald, you know, a lot of good feedback from them as well. I'm pretty aware of when I do something wrong, you know, let's say I mispronounce something or I call something wrong or I'm talking too much or I'm stepping on people's toes. I'm pretty aware of that. Zach Candido is obviously really busy with Canelo Crawford. So he sat in for a little bit on my first one. I'm sure he watched, but he was actually in my ear for a little bit that first one. The second one, he wasn't, but I know he was watching. Mike LaPlante, who was on the reins for the last one, gave me a lot of good feedback. I think my biggest problem is with Contender Series is I don't need to, for lack of better words, shove 10 pounds of shit in a 5-pound bag. I don't need to flex how prepared I am. You know, I need to just get through the walks, be reactive. And then if there's a moment where I can assert some of my study and do it. So it's like, I just got to be aware of that. Everybody knows I show up prepared, and I don't think it's like a conscious decision. I'm just like, the fight starts and I just want to start spewing off the laundry list of things I've studied. And it's not a flex. It's just like, I don't know. I prepare for these moments and I like to be able to lean on my preparation when deemed appropriate. So that's my biggest thing, my biggest feedback that I've gotten, which isn't necessarily the worst thing. It's just like, hey, react a little more. We know you're prepared, and there will come times when you can assert that into the conversation. So it's fun, dude. Like I say, it's like when you're doing pre and post fight, you're like, you know, you're the beginning of the book. And then like when you get a commentator, you're actually narrating the story. So that's a fun part, to like be a part of the narration, especially Contender Series, where you're really the storylines of these fighters is very much out in the forefront. You know, it's not UFC events where like your pre-fight walkout is like, you get to talk about your life. Like, it's just like, no, it's you shadow boxing and you talking about your opponent, where it's fun with Contender Series because we get to know more about their life story. And there's so many great stories with these fighters. Steven Asplund, if he's watching this, shout out to that guy. That guy's the man. Probably my favorite story through the season thus far.
Yeah, no, that's a great point there too. I imagine once you get into a proper UFC broadcast, there's more breathing time, all that type of stuff. Contender Series is just so go, go, go. There's little downtime to just like, you know, discuss all the things you said there. So that's kind of the difference between the main broadcast as well too.
Yeah, definitely. It's just crazy, bro. Like, I didn't go to college for this. I didn't go to college. I went to orientation for like 3 days and quit, you know, like, and went full time with fighting. I just never thought in a million years I'd be in this space. Like, it would like I said, it would validate, like, I thought a world title would validate my career and like all the effort I put into the sport. But I feel like if I can get that UFC commentating contract, I think it would be pretty close to that feeling, you know? So that's what I'm chasing right now. And I'm loving it, man. Like I said, I just feel like I'm young again. I feel like I'm like back in the chase of trying to become a UFC fighter, you know, living off Cliff Bars and things of that sort. The difference is I'm just chasing UFC commentary and I don't have to live off Cliff Bars. I can live comfortably while I do it.
No, I love to hear it, man. Good for you. You're definitely on the way. So just keep doing what you're doing. I think things are going to turn out as you want them.
Thank you.
So I guess before we move on to our list of the most intriguing fighters here, I want to hit on a couple relevant news topics. You know, all the kind of fallout from Noche UFC and Crawford Canelo has kind of been discussed, like the technical elements of it. But as we move forward here, I guess with Noche UFC, the big thing is who is going to be getting the title shot against Alexander Volkanovski. I feel like he came out and said basically a 4-way race in his mind. Diego Lopez, Aljamain Sterling, Lerone Murphy. He mentioned Movsar Evloev, who I feel like has kind of got no momentum at the exact moment. And then Yair Rodriguez seemed to feel that he was promised a title shot to take the Pitbull fight in Miami. Feels like he's really fallen out of circulation. He probably should have fought Diego Lopez at Noche, but here we are with this. I don't know. Lopez, to me, I don't really see much interest in a rematch right now with Volkanovski. Like, Volkanovski doing that fight back-to-back. Lopez, of course, did what he needed to do, but only a few Volk fights left. I feel like maybe people want fresh fights out of him at this point. I don't know. What's your kind of sense? Do you feel like Diego did enough to maybe get that case again, or are those other guys too tough to overcome right now?
Well, this is my take on it. And look, I'm a big Diego Lopez fan. I mean, for one, that fight was incredible. I don't know what it is, Mike. I feel like it's not luck. The fact that from 319 to Noche, we've seen three spinning back elbow knockouts. That's not luck. I feel like we're getting into another phase of like this paradigm shift in the sport where we've seen different styles have more success. And now we're in this phase where it's like elite athletes know how to fight. Now it's from a technical standpoint, now guys are going to stop pressure with spinning elbows. So Shout out to all three of those fighters that pulled that off and within a 30-day stretch. But for Diego Lopez, you turned around the number 10 guy that was surging, you know, John Silva was rolling hot. But I do think that for the time that we have left with Volkanovski, I think we do want fresh fights. At least for me as a fan, I would love fresh fights. I think Lerone Murphy's punched his ticket. Honestly, I think that for him to be undefeated, you know, in main events in the UFC, roll the dice on 3 weeks' notice. He had a tough weight cut, takes on Aaron Pico, who's very dangerous, who everybody already kind of said, Pico beats Lerone Murphy, he's getting a title fight. And even if it wasn't said, if Pico wins that fight, it's going to be by knockout. I mean, that's just how he is. Like, he has decisions on his record, but he's more of a gunslinger. He's a killer be killed type fighter. So most of the time, if he beats you, he's going to knock you out. So I feel like Lerone Murphy took the biggest chance, because if Aaron Pico beats him, Pico's jumping the line. We can get rid of all the politics. We'll just throw the new face in there that we brought in. It makes it a lot easier for the UFC. It makes it fun. But that's not what happened. Lerone Murphy took the chance, won by spinning elbow knockout. And I feel like he would be the best candidate if they're going to fight. That's what, 322 at the end of the year? December
323.
323. Yeah. So Volk already said it. That's the date he wants to fight. And I think that that makes the most sense to put Lerone in there. I think Yair thought he was promised a title fight after the Pitbull fight. Lopez feels he should be the next guy. Well, you know what I'm going to say. Everybody loves a grudge match. Let's do Yair and Lopez. That's the fight. Whoever wins that fight could pull ahead for a title fight. For Aljamain, he's kind of in a tough spot. I'm an Aljamain. That's my friend. I'm an Aljamain guy. I'm a homer. He's to me in the toughest space because, you know, he beats Brian Ortega. To me, he fought a very smart fight, but, you know, sustained an injury on the way. We don't know what his recovery time is like. And for Movzar, I hate to be hard on the guy, but it's like, how many fights have you pulled out of at this point? Like, I think Movzar's next fight should be his health. I think he needs to just focus on his health. You need to focus on your health and not the next fight and getting the next title fight, because your health woes are what's holding you back. It's not your skills. You have an amazing record. You're the number one guy. Focus on your health before you get yourself back into a fight, because your next fight's going to be the biggest one. So to me, it's Lerone. And I think the number one contender fight should 100% be Lopez and Yair. We'll see what happens with Aljo and his arm and the recovery time and what they have next for him.
Yeah, I think that's all great points there. Of all those names, like we talk about what's logical. Do you think Lerone has the best chance of beating Volk, or does that go to someone else?
Yeah, that's tough. I mean, Lerone's very elusive. He's a sharpshooter, very tactical fighter, does a good job. The longer the fight goes, the more he starts to pick it up with the pace and the output and the shot selection. Uses all eight of his weapons very well. Here's me trying to shove 10 pounds of shit in a 5-pound bag once again. I think that the biggest challenge for Volkanovski is not Lerone Murphy. I think the biggest challenge for Volkanovski is going to be Diego Lopez, because he pushed him pretty damn hard that first fight. Mm-hmm. And you know as well as I do, Mike, a fighter of Diego Lopez's caliber only comes back better after a loss while they're in their prime. He's been spending time at Oklahoma State Wrestling. Really, I think that that's the most dangerous fight for Volkanovski right now, is that rematch with Lopez. So that's why I think if I'm Volkanovski's team, let's fight the fresh faces. And, you know, when he bows out, maybe throw Diego Lopez in there for the, you know, inaugural new featherweight champion title fight, not going in there in a rematch.
No, I agree. I think if you're a team Volk, you're like, let's hang on to this win. It's probably going to age really well.
Yeah,
So impressed by Diego. Like, we know these young fighters, like, losing a title fight at that moment of your career, it can send you down two roads. It obviously sent him down the right one, and to rebound like that, I think shows a lot about his character and, you know, his fighting spirit and stuff. So I was really impressed by that. So I think, yeah, he's one off. Give me Diego Lopez versus anyone. John Silva too, man. I'm not writing him off by any means yet. That dude is very exciting. We'll see if he can find the middle ground between the chaos he showed that led him into that elbow and what he was doing when he was having a lot of success with Diego in the second round there too.
Yeah, he definitely fought a smart fight. And I just want to talk some shit to everybody online that's saying like, oh, the fighting nerds are done. Like, shut up. That's still one of the best teams in the world. This is what happens when you pit the best against the best. You know what I mean? And some of those fights were really close. Kyle Bahio versus Nasruddin, that was a close fight. You know, Carlos Parachis has rebounded. Yeah, I hate the people that just, you know, the recency bias of just like people going from saying they're the best in the world to now just kind of shitting on them. I do away with that. But John Silva showed, you know, he's shown a lot of promise even through the course of that fight, even though things didn't go his way. I mean, looked super tough, threw good techniques. Obviously, he stayed true to himself and just kind of letting things fly a little bit. If I was to give one bit of critique when it comes to the fighting nerds, put more emphasis on wrestling. You guys should bring in an American wrestler, bring in somebody from the Eastern Bloc to kind of help you guys fill that gap, because they do everything else perfect. That's just been the little, you know, chink in the armor for them, so to say, is the wrestling. But I think if they can figure that out, those guys can win a lot of big fights. I mean, they're going to win a lot of big fights regardless, but Yeah.
I think the backlash a little much, but I guess I understand it. I mean, they got the MMA awards like Gym of the Year. I think we at MMA Junkie gave them Team of the Year in 2024. And maybe if you kind of look back and like see, it was like 11-0 or 12-0, but the actual names they were winning maybe doesn't stack up to some championship wins other teams got and stuff. So maybe it was partially media fan hype that pushed them to a little too high of a stratosphere, but they were winning those fights. So credit to them. This happens.
Yeah. And it's also one of those things, like how many times are we going to nominate Killcliff and ATT? And you know, exactly. It's like, it was like you said, new team, fresh faces, big wins, very, very polarizing. You know, they almost, you know, the fighting nerds thing, they have their own, it's not a gimmick, you know, but it's like, it's something fun, something fresh. Mm-hmm. Like they walk around with the glasses and hand them out to people. You know, it's like, I love it. But I think that they're obviously a very smart team, hence the name. I think that at some point they do bring in somebody that can fill that void, someone that can, the high level wrestling, the high level grappling, somebody that can put it all together. Like a Dean Thomas of sorts, I feel like would be exactly what they need. But I don't think you could pay Dean Thomas enough money to go post up in Brazil for a while. I think Dean's very comfortable with like Philly, Florida. I know he wants to come out here and spend some time to get out of the heat, but, yeah, I don't know if you could pay enough Dean Thomas enough money to go down to Brazil for a while.
No,
maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'll ask him next time I see him.
Yeah, maybe we should. We have Dean on here regularly, so we can we'll get the answer to that at some point. But cool. On the other side of this weekend, obviously it was the big boxing fight, Canelo Crawford. We don't need to, you know, break down the technical mastery of Crawford. That was a sensational win. 41 million people, I think they said, watched on Netflix overall in that event, which is pretty incredible. But this has led to, I don't know, a whole thing the whole week kind of between Crawford and Ilia Topuria. And then now every day it's like a back and forth. Terrence Crawford saying on Monday he actually doesn't know who Ilia Topuria was and that he could have said he would like to fight him when they met I think the PI like a couple months ago, and instead he just asked him for a photo and didn't say anything about fighting each other. And Crawford says to him that comes across as fake now that he's like online calling him out saying he'd knock him out. I don't know if I believe Terrence Crawford when he says he doesn't know who Ilia Topuria was and he watches a lot of MMA, but you could see there. So I don't know what's happening here, if this is leading to anything. There was like a lot of similar shades to the very early portions of McGregor and Mayweather, how it was just like poking and it felt so impossible. I don't think this is leading to that, but I don't know. Does this appeal to you at all? Do you want to see Ilia Topuria box Terrence Crawford?
Absolutely not. We lost Conor McGregor after the Floyd Mayweather fight. And I think that, that's not the goal with Zuffa boxing. That's essentially that would be, if we pull Topuria up into that space, that would mean that that's part of their MO. Look, anything can happen. Sure. The difference is like Floyd, you know, Floyd is different from Crawford in a sense where I'm not saying Crawford doesn't know how to promote a fight, but Floyd kind of, you know, he was a master at that. He was good at taking jabs, poking fun, kind of selling his brand a little bit. Bud sells his brand because he can just downright fight. He is just damn good. Like he, you know, and Floyd was as well, but it just, to me, it's, and Ilya's not a Conor. That was such a one of one type thing. And at that time, that was peak, like Conor McGregor trash talk. Like that was like the ultimate. That was so much fun. And I'm not saying Topuria is not fun, but he just doesn't have that sharp tongue like Conor had. And to make that fight happen, it takes two fighters from two different worlds that are saying the things that can, that gets everybody's attention. And that's not necessarily with words. It's the tone, it's the jabs, it's the things like that. Topuria needs to stay right here. There's plenty of fights for him to get through before he can even entertain crossing over. I mean, the depth at 155 pounds is very deep, to say the least. I feel like he's got to win, you know, he's got to defend that title at least three times before he can even think about doing something like that. And I just don't know if that's something the UFC would do again with one of their marquee guys. I don't know if that's true or not, but we will see. But it's something that, it doesn't interest me. You know what interests me more? And I know he's retired. I'd be more interested in seeing like a Dustin Poirier go over to boxing, where it's not one of, like, you have an obligation as a champion to defend that title and to be there. And even when Conor did it, it was almost a little bit unfair. There was a lot of guys that wanted to fight him and he just like walked away into another sport. So, I think that like there's other fighters you could have crossover that would be a lot of fun. Like I wish we could have had Dustin do that one time, because Dustin's good with his hands. That would have been a lot of fun because he's a marquee guy, not a champion. He's not log jamming any divisions. We would love to see that type of crossover. That'd be a lot of fun, but I'm not interested in a Topuria Crawford fight.
No, me neither. It's very clear that Ilya Topuria is a special fighter in mixed martial arts. So like, can we just go down that path and see how special he really is and see how far he can push this? Like, can he be the first three division champion? Can he knock these guys out and maybe go to welterweight and fight Islam if he's there? Like, I don't know. There's all these options that are actually in the sport and the organization he's competing for. I want to see how far he can push that. Is that too much to ask these days?
No, that's exactly what you said. And honestly, the groundwork is kind of laid for him to potentially become a three division champ if Islam can get past Jack Della, because then Ilya has the opportunity to fight for the welterweight title against a guy that's not a huge welterweight. I mean, Islam's big. He's like the average size of a welterweight, but in lightweight, he was very big. So I'm like, for Ilya, it's like to see Ilya go out there and beat a guy like Shavkat, I don't see it. You know what I mean? I just like, how do you even get inside? Shavkat's huge. Like the biggest guy you fought was Jai Herbert. And at one point he did sit you down pretty bad, you know? So and I'm saying that with all due respect, a lot of factors in there with him being at 45 and things like that, things of that sort. But this is perfect. If Islam could go out there and beat Jack Della, dude, that's the best path to becoming a three division champ. Otherwise, if it's a big guy holding that belt, I think it's maybe a little far out of his reach, no pun intended.
Mm-hmm. Who do you think Ilya will fight next? I know he does these press conferences like weekly at WOW, his organization out there in Spain. He said that he's ready to fight anyone, which I guess he no longer is not willing to fight Armin Sarukyan. I don't know. That was a weird thing. He was saying he'd rather retire than fight him at one point, but I don't think he's sticking true to that. But he just said he's waiting on the UFC. So I don't know. My thing since he beat Charles Oliveira has been, it's kind of the three-way race, right? It's Paddy, it's Armin, it's Justin Gaethje. I feel like, you know, Paddy is the fight that has the hype, probably more appealing to the current era. There's the grudge match, the history, maybe some appeal in terms of the actual skill sets. I think Armin is the most difficult fight, like the best MMA fight and the most intriguing MMA fight. And then I think Justin is maybe, all due respect to him, the fight you would give Ilya if you want to keep this winning streak against the older guys, like, you know, the big names, and try to get maybe another big highlight, big knockout for Ilya's resume before a guy like Justin is no longer there. Which one would be most appealing to you?
Well, here's the thing. I don't have insight, but from what I've heard, the rumblings from all different sides, from, you know, just don't want to get too into the weeds so I don't get myself in trouble. Fine. But it's nobody that I've talked to that's in the higher ups, but it's just people in different circles in relation to the sport. There are some people saying it's going to be Paddy because maybe it's, you know, you put some big fights together early in 2026. We're not going to see Topuria in the rest of the ESPN era. I think that if Ilya was going to fight in December, I feel like we would be hearing about it by now. Cause that's not that far away.
It's interesting because he announced he was going to fight in December, like 2 days after he beat Oliveira, but that was the only thing, like, you know, there hasn't been anything further on that.
Yeah. See, I've heard it could be Paddy and I've heard it could be Justin. And for the Justin fight, I think that, yes, it's a tough matchup for him, but worst case scenario, even if Justin wins the title, it's not necessarily a bad thing. He's one of the most beloved fighters on the roster. But for me as the fighter, like, now I don't want to be political. Now I want to speak as a fighter. I feel like a big part of me feels like, you know what? Give Justin Gaethje that title fight because we only have him for just this much longer, you know? And he took a huge chance when he fought Max. You know, whether they promised him something or not, I don't know that. Nobody knows what's the truth except for Justin. But it just, like, you know what, just give the guy the fight. He earned it. He has earned it in blood. He has earned it through his efforts, through all that he's given us and left us. Like, he has given us things he will never get back through the course of him having this goal to entertain us fans. So just give him the fight. You know what I mean? It's a win-win scenario. The Paddy fight's always going to be there because those guys have youth on their side. Justin Gaethje doesn't have youth on his side. And for Armon, unfortunately, you know, he's got to win one more. You know, so I think you got to stick him in there with a Dan Hooker or somebody that's on a roll to validate his efforts to get him in that title fight. So I just feel strongly that I think the best fight to make, the biggest fight to make, is obviously Paddy. But the fighter in me is like, give Justin that fight. You know, give Justin that fight because he deserved it. And that might even be his last one, you know. So that's kind of where I stand with the three-way race to the 155-pound title.
Yeah, I like that too. I think, and that's what I've kind of predicted. I thought it would be Justin. It just makes sense. Give the guy, well, he's still here. You have an opportunity. And again, that's going to look really nice on Ilya Topuria's resume if he can get that win, knock him out. You know, people talk about the greatest 3-fight winning streak. You could kind of span it to 4 because that's another huge name over a legendary fighter. But we will see. Hopefully you get the answers to these questions soon, Mike. All right, let's move into, I guess, the main event of the show here. We want to name our most intriguing fighters of 2025. As I said off the top in the intro a little bit, these are not just the ones that you would, I guess, think right off the top of your head. I gave you the caveat of it can't be any current champion. It can't be a former UFC champion. It can't be someone who is confirmed to be fighting for a UFC title or just coming off a UFC title fight. So that obviously narrows the scope a fair bit here. Before we get into the list, curious question for you. So we talk about like what would make you important, what would make you intriguing, probably activity, right? That's a big thing that a lot of people like to preach. You need to be consistent. If I was to say, as we sit here mid-September, how many fighters do you think have had 3 UFC fights so far in 2025?
Yeah, there's a handful of them. I mean, the number one guy at my list definitely has, I think, or he was scheduled to have 3, but I think activity is definitely key. And I think the other thing that that's kind of a key point in picking this list is also like, how do you resonate with fans? Do you resonate with fans at all? Not just like if you're from a country and you just have a fan of, you know, your fellow countrymen that support you, like does your brand transcend countries? I think that's a big thing. So it's gotta be the perfect storm. Wins, how you win, activity, and the response from the fans. Do you transcend countries? Cause this is very much an international affair when it comes to making this 5
of course. Well, I'm very curious to hear your list. So to answer my own question here, so 12 fighters have fought 3 times so far in the UFC in 2025, and 4 of them are 3-0. The rest have either lost one and all that stuff. So I'm curious to see if any of those 4 have made your list, but let's give you the floor here first, Mike. Who do you got?
My first one, who unfortunately we lost in the main event for Vancouver, but I'm a big Fluffy Hernandez fan. I feel like Fluffy Hernandez, for one, the guy is rolling. That finish over Roman Dolidze was incredible. I mean, just literally stunned him, like choked him standing, walked away, swears on the mic. He really reminds me, it's like a second coming of the Diaz brothers almost. Loves to smoke pot, you know, very incorrect with his grammar, swears. Like he's just like, he kind of falls into that category. And after that win over Roman Dolidze, I feel like he's really starting to get everybody's attention. So to me, Fluffy Hernandez is the first guy that comes to mind. That's the first person on my list.
Yeah, he was, I'm so bummed he fell out of that, especially I'm from Vancouver originally. I was looking forward to that nice homecoming main event. I mean, Brendan Allen, all due respect for stepping in against Rainier DeRitter. But yeah, I was really curious to see that fight because it was a very obvious title eliminator to me. But hopefully Fluffy's injury that pulled him out of that fight is nothing too serious and he can get back in there early next year. I guess I'll just skip to that portion of my list too, Mike. I had the other side of that was supposed to be main event. I put Rainier DeRitter up there just because I think, man, this guy is the like perfect example of where activity can get you in the UFC, saying yes to everything. He had more than enough motivation to do so because he was in one championship hell for a long time there. Right. Couldn't get fights, really bad contract. And here he comes rapidly rising up the ranks. And yeah, man, like this guy too, when Fluffy pulled out, he could have made a stink about it. Like, why is he fighting Brendan Allen, you know, from what he's done? But clearly showing up, saying yes, has done him wonders. And I would not be surprised if he wins this fight impressively if he skips over Imavov and gets Khamzat Chimaev, just purely because it seems like he's doing a bit of a favor to the UFC here as well, taking this replacement.
Yeah, he was actually on my list as well. I came up with a big list. Yeah. I got a lot of names, so I'm like waiting to see like who you say, and I can like check guys off the list because I want to keep it. There's a lot more than just 5 interesting UFC fighters in the roster that meet our criteria. So RDR was right up there. The activity, the style, the story. I think just him coming over, being a former 2-division, 1 championship fighter, 2-division champion. I think his story, the win streak, the activity, perfect storm to make this list. I got one for you. And I wanted to throw, since I was talking to you, I got a couple Canadian fighters on here. Ooh, and I've been going back and forth as to which one I want to pick. And you know what? It seems right to throw a lady in there. Jasmine Jazz DeVizius, to me, makes my list of most intriguing fighters because she, very active, very tough. I've been in the training room with her in the things, and I'm not going to name the girls that she was training with, but I've seen her in training, like have girls mounted and like smashing their face with elbows, with her elbow pads. She's rough. She's tough. I think it would be so much fun. And she's on her way because she's fighting Manon Fior in Vancouver, I believe in the co-main event. She goes out there and beats Manon. She could be in a title fight. She could be the next face of Canada. And I feel like Canada has long been waiting for a new face to represent that country. And I think that she'd be perfect. I think it'd be fun. She's got the skills. She's fun on the microphone in her very Canadian way, you know? But I think that it would be, to me, I'm very interested in Jasmine Jazavicius's fights, especially this next one. And like I said, she goes out there, fights Manon, gets herself into another title fight. The first Canadian female to be in a title fight since Letourneau, Valerina.
Yeah, that'd be right.
Look at that.
And dude, I think for maybe the first Canadian period since then. I think our last one was, what, Rory McDonald in 2015 against Robbie Lawler. So it's been a very long time. Or I guess GSP in 2017 when he came back for the one-off.
But it would be fun. I think it'd be great. I mean, her fights are fun. She's tough. Like I said, to me, it's a perfect storm activity. And she's in a good spot, man. I think it'd be cool to have her be the face of Canadian fighters. And she could punch her ticket to get there with a win over Manon.
Okay, well, I'm interested in these training stories now. It was actually just this week, their team manager at Niagara Top Team invited me to come down and watch her and Mike Malott train for the day and do some interviews. So I might actually have to take them up on that and go down there next week.
That's a very underrated team, man. They got something going on at Niagara Top Team. And ever since Aaron Jeffrey and Jasmine came to Syndicate, I've definitely had my eyes on their team. They're legit. Those guys over there, they know what they're doing. They got some good fighters over there.
Okay, I'm going to take next here, and this one's a little further down the rankings, maybe not even be in the rankings, but being very impressed with him so far. 4-0 in the UFC overall, 2-0 in 2025. It is bantamweight Vinicius Lokdog Oliveira, who I've been very impressed with, man. I mean, God, 4 fights in the UFC. Bernardo Sopage, that insane flying knee knockout, one of the knockouts of the year in 24. Ricky Simone, Saeed Nurmagomedov, Kyler Phillips. And it feels like he doesn't have nearly the traction he should off those 4 wins in the UFC. Quite impressed by this guy, 29 years old. Bantamweight's a real tough division to break your way through and get one of those fights against like the top 5-6 guys. But he keeps doing what he's doing. I think he's going to be in one of those before we know it.
Yeah, dude. I mean, he's an incredible, kind of what I talked about earlier, an incredible athlete, very explosive. I mean, at any moment in the fight, there's going to be fight-ending techniques that you're going to have to deal with if you're facing him. And yeah, he's just one of those guys. You look at that win streak, you look at the names, Kyler Phillips, Ricky Simone, Saeed Nurmagomedov. I mean, those three alone, I mean, that's very, very, very good credentials on your record, it's safe to say. So yeah, he's a guy, he was honestly on my list as well. Great minds think alike, Mike. But yeah, if I see him on the card, I'm definitely tuning in. And I think that we could see him in some big, big fights coming up, man. I think he's due for a big one, especially with his style, with the people that he's beat. I think we could see him in a big fight soon for sure.
Yeah, and not afraid to talk some shit out there. I think he's called Umar Nurmagomedov out every fight since he got into the UFC. So he wants the smoke. Love to see it. Can't wait to see who he fights next. We'll flip it back to you now.
So my next fighter, he's got a big fight. I can't talk about it, but it's pretty much confirmed. I'll tell you this. It's a big fight in November, and it's against a ranked opponent, and he deserves it. It's Nazim Sadikov. I mean, this guy, it's the style. It's the frequency of his fights. And the fact he's from Cerro Longo. I think that Cerro Longo obviously has a knack for producing these great fighters, but I feel like everybody that comes out of that gym is a character in their own right. Marab, Aljo, Weidman, you know, Ally Quinta, all these guys are a lot of fun in the way they fight and their personalities as well. Nazim definitely has that. He's got a great sense of humor. He does impersonations very well, according to my wife. She sat next to him for some fights and she said that he had her rolling over the barrel the whole night with just the jokes and just the impersonations and things like that. So definitely, and like I said, the first thing is the style. The guy is must-see TV. The Nicholas Mota fight, the Terrence McKinney fight, 2 fights where he had to stay calm in the storm in terms of staying composed when having his opponents just uncork offense and punches and bunches and all the things he's had to deal with. He's got a lot of resiliency, and that makes for fun fights, especially when you're talking about him getting into the rankings. When they announce his fight, it's a really fun fight, and he's very deserving of that, so I'm excited for him.
Yeah, I think I've heard some rumblings of that one. We won't break any fight news on here yet. I don't think we've had one on the bonfire yet, but it can stay that way for now. But yes, I'm looking forward to that one. I'm sure it'll be announced sooner than later here. Big fan of Nazim, and he's been nothing short of exciting so far in the UFC. I will go to mine now. Someone who's also been very exciting in the UFC, 6-0, only one fight so far this year, but it was a big one against a former title contender. It is Michael Morales, who is probably one of my higher ranked guys. He's undefeated. I think he's got a big fight in store as well. And he's someone who I was like, is he maybe a little too high? But I still think he's working on gaining the traction and all that stuff in this welterweight division, which is probably more stacked than ever. And he's one of the people who is part of this new wave too. Very exciting Brazilian. Or no, he's not from Brazilian. He's Ecuadorian.
And, you know, he was kind of clamoring my name for a little bit there. And I'm glad this is a hard thing for me to say. This is hard for me to say, but I'm going to say it. I'm glad that he kind of surpassed clamoring for my name a lot, and he's moved on to bigger and better things. That's a tough out for anybody. I mean, the size alone, the guy is massive. That's a tough fight for anybody. And that goes all the way up to Jack Della Maddalena. I mean, this guy, and I feel like in the fight with Gilbert Burns, my biggest knack with him was how wild he was. And being wild is fun, but being wild doesn't necessarily get you into that spot of being in the top five, being in the top 10, becoming a world champion. Like, you have to find a way to kind of control your own chaos. You know what I mean? And he was a very chaotic fighter before. And I feel like in the Burns fight, we saw him select his shots, place the shots, not just throw big punches. I do think this. I think that guy, he's a ton of fun from the country, the following, the look. Obviously, the way that he fights, but I think he's going to be a middleweight someday. He's so young and he's so big. I believe it was Bilal that said when he brought Morales in for one of his camps, I think he said that one day Morales was like, showed up to practice and maybe was like 218 or in the 220s or just, he's a big boy, you know? He was a guy on my list as well. He's got the youth, he's got time. And for how young he is, he's already got big wins under his belt. So he's definitely a guy that I find to be very, very intriguing as a competitor and as a fan.
Yes. Okay. I'm going to actually go back to back here. Can stick with another welterweight. I'm curious what you think of this guy. He was on probably the most borderline on my list, but I'm interested in him just because of the win streak he has going on. 6-0-1 in the UFC. It's Renat Fakhrudinov, who just beat Andreas Gustafsson out there. I mean, I don't know how you can't mention him. He's on a 24 fight unbeaten streak in his career. The longest unbeaten streak of any fighter in the UFC right now, currently in mixed martial arts overall. I don't know. Like, I know it's been somewhat inconsistent. The performances have been sometimes sloppy, some questionable decisions. I think a draw in there as well, but I don't know. Like, to me, if you're just going that long without a loss, you get my attention at least. I find you interesting.
I think he's a very nice guy. Can be wild at times, but he punched his ticket into becoming one of my favorite fighters when he served Kevin Lee a club and a sub. Punched him and choked him, and I was like, thank you. Like, I love you. Shout out to Kevin Lee. At times, just a little unrefined. But the tenacity, I think, has pulled him through in some of those fights and really maintained that win streak. But he looked very similar to Michael Morales in the same way where, like, very wild fighters, and that's good to a certain extent, but that's not going to get you to the upper echelon of your respected weight class. But he looked a lot more polished, placed his shots. Just at times, it was just like the big looping hooks, and then he'd swing him back, and then he'd swing the other one. And it's like, that'll win you fights, but that's not going to make you elite. That doesn't make you an elite fighter. So I feel like he looked like an elite fighter in that fight with Gustafsson. That was a fight I was watching pretty closely. Gustafsson in that fight with Chaos Williams, it was like, holy crap, this guy, you know, the offensive onslaught with the ground and pound, the nonstop coming forward. He met his match, safe to say, with Renat Fakhrudinov. I feel like when Gustafsson tried to impose his game plan, the way that, you know, Renat was able to push back in a sense, almost shut him down before he got hurt with the punches. When he just realized, wow, I'm not going to be able to just bully this guy to the fence and maul him. I think that jumped in his head. And then in comes the punches, in comes the stoppage, and in comes this kind of resurgence in a sense of Renat Fakhrudinov. He's back in that conversation as one of the dark horses at 170 pounds.
Yeah, I'd like to see him get a pretty sizable step up here. I mean, 7 fights in the UFC, hasn't lost yet on this long wing streak. Like, let's test it. Let's see if he can level up his game or if he's maybe, as you said there, like fighting to the level of his competition a little bit. We need to find that out. So we'll see what happens with Renat going into the end of this year in 2026. Maybe he'll land a fight in Abu Dhabi.
Let's stick with welterweight. And I'm going to go with a ranked fighter, and I'm going to go with a former foe. I'm picking Sean Brady. And while Sean Brady may not have the personality that resonates with the fans, I'll tell you what is. And it kind of goes opposite of this activity thing. If it was up to Sean Brady, he would have 4 fights under his belt this year. He is, to me, he has become the boogeyman of 170 pounds. It's not Shavkat. It's not Michael Morales. It's not anybody. The boogeyman of 170 pounds is Sean Brady. Nobody wants a part of him. And there are times when people will avoid powerful wrestlers and grapplers. You know, those are the least appealing training camps for anybody that doesn't have that as one of their strengths to their game. But Sean showed he's not just a powerful grappler. Since the way he's changed his game since his fight against Bilal Muhammad is incredible. I mean, look at the way that he was able to fight Gilbert Burns. I mean, just pressure, striking, the Leon Edwards fight just absolutely torched him. Sean Brady did the one thing that I said when I was training for Sean Brady. I said, this fight isn't as hard as it could be. And I'll tell you why it's not as hard as it could be, because he moves laterally so much. And I'm big on lateral movement, but when you are built like Sean Brady, when you have no neck and you have these huge traps to support the back of your head, you just go on a straight line. You can punch guys. There's nothing they can do to hurt you. You keep your chin tucked, you move forward, you throw big punches. You are going to be a problem for everybody. And that's exactly what he's been doing. He's fighting more on a straight line now, which is tailor-made to his style. The way he fought Leon Edwards, I mean, he put that whole, everybody, he was already on everybody's radar, but I feel like that fight with Leon Edwards and the fight with Gilbert Burns, but mainly the Leon Edwards fight, it put everybody on notice. To me, yeah. He is now, he is the boogeyman of 170 pounds. There's nobody that wants to fight him. I heard rumors that they were trying to do him and Machado Gary, and Machado Gary wants an astronomical number for that fight, where it's almost like, given the fact that he, you know, fought Krotchis, they probably gave him a really nice paycheck to step in on short notice and save that main event. I think that he's almost pricing himself out to get out of that fight with Sean Brady. I don't think Ian Gary's afraid of anybody. I think he's a fighter's fighter, but I think that he knows that it's better business for him to fight somebody other than Sean Brady. So might as well price yourself out of that fight and force somebody else to fight the boogeyman of 170 pounds, which is Sean Brady.
Right. Yeah. And I'm curious who is going to fight him, because this division's really interesting right now, as we've kind of talked about. So many guys on the rise, so many established contenders. There's kind of been the turnover of, you know, the Usmans to a degree is hanging on, but Colby Covington, et cetera. But we're kind of stuck here until we see what happens with Jack and Islam, right? Like, God forbid if Islam does win and something happens with Topuria, like, I feel bad for all these guys that it might just be delayed further and further and further. Credit to Leon Edwards for taking a fight on that card. That's going to be obviously good for him to be aligned with the title, but the rest of these guys, Bilal, Sean Brady, Kamaru Usman, Shavkat, Ian Machado Gary, like, I don't know how they're going to pair them up or how long these guys intend to wait to see what's happening before.
Yeah. Well, you kind of named the pairings. I think, you know, to me, it's like you do Bilal in Kamaru because there's a storyline there. The guys don't like each other. They're kind of relative to the same age. They're right up at the top of the division. So high up that you can't justify taking like the 11 guy, you know. Usman already did that with Buckley, you know, it took a guy that was a little further down the ladder. To me, I think you got to do Machado Gary and Brady. That's the fight that they got to figure out a way to get. It's the Ian Machado Gary side, you know, because Sean will fight anybody. He wants to fight. He is eager to fight. It doesn't matter who you are. He wants to fight Shavkat. He wants to fight Kamaru. He wants to fight everybody but Colby Covington, because we know Colby Covington's trash and he shouldn't even be ranked. But I do think that you named the pairings. Those are the fights that need to happen. They need to put Sean Brady in a fight here real soon.
Yeah. So the one we didn't pair there, do you do Shavkat versus Michael Morales then? Undefeated versus undefeated? I think
Shavkat kind of falls into that same category as Movsar Vloev. He's got to focus on getting healthy. I don't know. I think that if his knee was better, we would see him back in the octagon by now. I might know a lot more about that situation, but I'm not inclined to talk about it, sure, as I know that Daniel Rubenstein will be watching this show. So I got to save myself a lashing and just play my cards close to my chest. I think the Shavkat just needs to focus on his health right now, and then we can see him in a big fight soon.
Oh, man. Well, that's a bit of a bummer. I mean, if he was ready to fight in the next 3 months, I'm sure you would be, you know, speaking more highly of it. But yeah, this is what happens to some of these guys, man. Sometimes it was Khabib for an era there. Like, it was Islam for a bit. Umar Nurmagomedov went through it. It's like you could tell, like, this person is ready to be a championship level fighter, but their biggest opponent.
Well, on the other side of the coin, I think we could see Shavkat early next year. You know, especially like, this is just, you know, we know what happened in the Machado Gary fight. And I think that, like, if he was raring to go, he would have mentioned something by now. You know, we just haven't heard anything. So, yeah, but the, I mean, that's definitely the guy that I feel like is just kind of getting forgotten about in this welterweight conversation is like, hey, I'm here. I'm Shavkat. I've finished all but one opponent. Still waiting for my title fight that he was supposed to get at UFC 310. You know, and I'm a big Shavkat fan. I had his hat out here earlier, but I was wearing it the other night after I had a couple beers. Yeah. So I put it back inside.
That's hilarious. Okay. I think I just went, so it's back to you. Or did you just go?
I did. Yeah. Sean that was Brady? My number four. I'll give you another one. I'll go back to back. This is another ranked guy. And I love this. I love this guy. And I'm very intrigued by him because of the country that he represents, because the talent that he has shown inside the octagon, the youth, maybe not as frequent as active, but when you're fighting in main events, you're not necessarily going to get the opportunity to fight four times in a year. Tatsuro Taira. I mean, that guy, he is going to be, that's the face of Japan in the UFC right now. I mean, I know we've re-signed Horiguchi. We haven't seen him fight again yet, but right now that kid has Japan on his back and he's nasty. I mean, that Royval fight, he literally lost by the skin of his teeth. I mean, he would have been in a title fight last year had he beat Royval, you know? So, the kid is uber talented. He's really coming into his own. He's got youth on his side and he's the face of Japan. I mean, this is the guy that it's a no brainer when Saitama Super Arena is finished. I don't know what the logjam is as to why we haven't gone back to Japan. But if the logjam is Saitama Super Arena, I heard it's going to be done in 2 years and it's a no brainer that we do UFC Japan. We do him in a title fight. We do him in a main event. You know, I'm big, the Japanese culture of fighting is resonated with me. I'm a big Pride fan. You know, I remember growing up, I would stay up on Sheardog and refresh the play-by-play to just keep up with the pay-per-views cause I couldn't rent them. But Tatsuro Taira, man, I've got to call, I've got to work the desk for a lot of his fights. I've done a lot of in-depth study on his style and his game. Incredible fighter. And there's so much upside to him, more so than to me, any of the fighters younger than 26 in the UFC. I think that he's shown the most promise, and he's the face of Japan. So, and he's starting to transcend, like I said, transcend countries. He's got a lot of fans here in the US and obviously a lot of fans in Japan and in the Asian culture. So yeah, that's my guy. Definitely, definitely big Tatsuro Taira fan.
Yeah. I love that one. He was on my list as well. Yeah, he's definitely at flyweight. Probably the most compelling guy outside of Joshua Van and the champion, but of course we said no title challengers and we're expecting Joshua Van to fight for that belt next. So yeah, great choice with Tatsuro Taira. I guess I had no flyweights other than him on my list. I will go to a bantamweight, someone who's still very early in their UFC career, just 2-0 in the octagon. Both fights this year came off contender series. The only second generation fighter in the UFC now, second ever with Randy Couture and Ryan Couture. It's Elijah Smith, who I think is 22-year-old prospect, had that incredible slam knockout a few weeks ago. Just a guy who seems like he has the right head on his shoulder, obviously great guidance from his father, Gilbert Smith. I don't know. I'm very interested in this guy. And we're now getting into the thing that we talked about probably for many years, being like, what happens when these guys' kids are old enough to get into it? And they're training their entire life, not in one discipline, but in all the disciplines to train for this exact sport, for this organization. We're starting to see it now. And I'm curious to see what Elijah Smith can do. Obviously not the most refined guy for a 22-year-old, but well on his way.
He's definitely a diamond in the rough. And it's definitely, the storyline's great. And you really kind of expedited the process in terms of garnishing attention when you rampage slam KO somebody, especially at the Apex. I can't imagine what that sounded like. Like to imagine being, you've been to an Apex show. It's intimate. It's quiet. You can hear every punch. You can hear these guys breathe sometimes when it gets quiet in there. Could you imagine sitting in the Apex when that guy got slammed on his head? Like that was incredible. I mean, yeah, but I definitely love the father son storyline. I think it's something that kind of gives you that warm kind of family feeling, you know, like father, son sitting there watching the fights. It's like, oh, son, look at this guy. You know, this guy's kid out there fighting. I love it. I think it's a lot of fun. It's like a good heartwarming story for mixed martial arts. And at times I feel like there are like stretches where we lack those and it's just a bunch of bad press. So Elijah Smith with Gilbert Smith, that's feel good headlines. And now ever since that fight, people are going to tune in to see him after that slam KO. I think we could see maybe punch this ticket to get out of the Apex into an arena in his next fight. That remains to be seen, but yeah, he's definitely got my attention. He was one on my list as well.
Okay, yeah, I have two left on my list, so I'm going to go back to back with just one of them. Here is another Smith, another prospect, Jacoby Smith, out of Fortis MMA, 2-0 in the UFC, 2-0 in 2025 so far. I think both fights were pretty short notice, so we haven't seen him on like a full camp for a UFC fight yet, but you know, everything Saif Saud says about this guy, it seems like he, you know, they have very, very high hopes for him. And I've been pretty impressed with what he's done so far. Some rocky moments, but they kind of felt like they were a product of maybe not being.
Yeah, definitely. Prepared. I mean, but those are two fights where you have to take those fights. I mean, respectfully to press is Preston Parsons and Nico Price. Respect to them.
Yeah.
But Jacoby Smith is on another level. So it's almost like, if you're going to put Jacoby Smith in those types of fights, it's not like they're making it short notice to give them a chance, but it's like, dude, when those fights are offered to you for how skilled and gifted as you are, you take those fights, you take those chances. And while you will have rocky moments, you still have produced great results. So yeah, he's that guy's a problem, man. Something about those Oklahoma State Cowboys, man, they sure know how to fight. And I know DC's got a lot of praise for him. I saw a picture DC was, running him and Torres Finney through a workout at the Apex. So when you have the guidance and the backing of someone like Daniel Cormier, and you have all this raw skill, and especially if you're like a gritty wrestler that could deal with tough practices and just having a fiery coach, being at Fortis MMA with Saif Saud, that's a perfect fit. That kid's got a lot of promise, and he's on one on my list as well. I mean, that guy, just an absolute unit, a physical specimen, wrestling, you know, the wrestling credentials with knockout power. I mean, that's a problem. It's a problem for anybody.
Yep. Okay. Give us one or two more here, and then I'll give my last.
I'll give you
one,
two.
And we'll close it up.
I'm gonna give you two at the same time.
Okay.
Okay. This is to our tough 33 champions, Bopo Joseph and Daniil Donchenko. Listen, and maybe I'm being biased because I was on the Ultimate Fighter, but I got to be around these guys for an extended amount of time, and both have great stories. You know, for Joseph, you know, this is the, you know, one of Uriah Faber's star pupils, somebody that he's trained since he was just a child. And now he's on a second stint in the UFC, wins the Ultimate Fighter, beats Alibi, who Alibi, for people that you didn't see what we saw on Ultimate Fighter, that was a very credible win. I still believe someday Alibi's going to have a number next to his name. Undefeated from Kazakhstan. Mm-hmm. Joseph goes out there, hands him his first loss. And then for Daniil, you know, this last weekend against my boy Rodrigo Cenzanando. Just the offensive onslaught with the elbows, the pressure. The guy literally fights like Rafael Fiziev. And it just so happens that that's one of his main training partners back home in Thailand. So, and he's not even in the right weight class. He's going to go down to 155 pounds. So you look at the way that he fights and the way that he finishes fights and the fact he's not even in the right weight class. Both of these guys are going to have incredible runs in the UFC. So I got to give it up to Bopo Joseph and Daniil Donchenko. Those are two guys to definitely watch. Very interesting stories and very fun to watch fight.
I love that. Very timely too, coming off the show, which we know you're a big part of. And I believe Donchenko is the 50th winner of the domestic version of the Ultimate Fighter reality series. So that's a nice little feather in the cap. My question is, will it be the last? What do you think? Do you think we get Tough continuing on in the next era of Paramount?
I hope so. I think Tough is such a great format for fighters. I believe it's tougher than the Dana White's Contender Series, no pun intended. But I think that, I think there's only one way you could kind of revamp it, is you have to do it live. Like, that's the only, like, how many ways can you shake up a pre-taped reality show? I think that people are really more attuned to live fights than the reality show format. So I think if you combine the two, I think that would be great. And I think if they do that, I definitely got to be a coach, or DC's got to be a coach so I can be a shoo-in to be a coach. Cause you can't do a live season and not have me be a part of it. I got to be a part of it if they revamp it and do it live.
Yeah. Do you have 15 weeks to commit to that?
I don't have kids. Coach? My wife would, as long as I fly my wife down to visit me, she'd be happy. So yeah, dude, I got 15 weeks to commit. I eat, sleep and breathe mixed martial arts. I'm like, this is all I do. I have no kids. I have no responsibilities except just doing anything and everything involving mixed martial arts.
Yes, that's pretty much where I am right now too. We'll see if that changes at some point down the line. Okay, I'll close it out here. Mike, this is the last one. I know we kind of talked about his name a little bit earlier in the show and off air. He's right on the borderline there because, as you said, you think he might get the shot, but it is Paddy Pimblett, 7-0 in the UFC, only one fight this year. I mean, kind of self-explanatory. He's someone who has managed to get traction for himself, both in the bubble and at times outside of the bubble, has the personality, has the fighting style, and I think we're about to find out the real questions about how good he actually is, because that's the one we don't truly know. The Jared Gordon fight still looms in a lot of people's minds, but he looks spectacular against Michael Chandler, and his next fight, whether it is for the title or against someone in the top five, we're going to get the answers of how good Paddy
Pimblett is. Yeah, I mean, honestly, that was the guy that was at the top of my list. That's like, when you said, like, five most intriguing fighters, it's just like, I don't even look on my laptop like, Paddy, and then I'll start looking, you know? So, yes, the Jared Gordon fight does loom, but as a competitor and somebody that's been in the octagon, you know, almost 20 times, whatever it is, there are growing pains that come with it until you get comfortable. And for Paddy, that was just one of those fights where he's just still trying to find a way to be comfortable inside the octagon. And look at him now. I think the Paddy that fights Michael Chandler, if that Paddy goes and fights Jared Gordon, we're having a different conversation. But yeah, I mean, he's got the brand. He's got the following. No fighter has transcended countries greater than Paddy Pimblett has. I mean, he's got American fans wearing wigs at his fights. I mean, we don't see that in the UFC. So to me, Paddy is the complete package. He's got the way he fights. He's on a win streak. He looks good. He's in the rankings. He transcends countries. He's got people clamoring to see him. He's a main card fighter now, finding himself potentially in a main event against Ilya Topuria. I mean, he's in a 2-man race with Justin Gaethje right now to fight Ilya Topuria. And if I have a feeling Paramount's going to want to come out swinging, and I could see that being their first numbered event is Paddy versus Ilya. I could see that. It's not something I've heard, but it's something that I could see in the foreseeable future for Paddy Pimblett. But nonetheless, I mean, he's in due time, he will be in a title fight. So he is the most intriguing fighter on the entire UFC roster by a landslide.
Love it. Do you, I mean, hopefully we'll see if they do it in January. I worry about a Paddy Pimblett Christmas a month out from a title fight with all the food, but we'll see. Like, if you think about that fight now, all things being equal, like, do you give him a chance against Ilya? Do you think that's a captivating fight, or is everything leading up and before they actually get in the cage more interesting than
Well, here's the thing. I mean, we know what the toughest fight for Ilya is, and that's Arman Tsarukyan. Now, do we feel that Justin Gaethje is the most favorable of the three? Probably, but that doesn't mean Justin Gaethje doesn't have a chance, but I think that that fight favors him the most. Paddy kind of is starting to develop this mystique around him, where, like, before it was like, he's not as good as, you know, the hype and the attention is not matching up to the skill level. Then he goes out and fights Michael Chandler and does what he did to Michael Chandler. Now there's this mystique around him where it's like, wait, is he that good? You know what I mean? Like, now people are starting to wonder, but either way, it's like, there's the storyline there. The foundation is set. And he's earned his spot. I mean, he's ranked number five now, five or six. He's at the top of the heap. Let's throw him in there. I mean, he's got time on his side, so why not? I mean, there's no better win-win scenario. I know Justin Gaethje and Topuria, I said, was a win-win, but there's no bigger win-win scenario for the UFC than Paddy versus Ilya Topuria. No. Whichever way it goes, it's perfect.
Yeah, agreed. That would be a great fight. I'd love to see it. And I kind of hope they do it, because I think it'd be a lot of fun leading up to that, especially for the first Paramount show, how they would promote it, all that type of stuff. I think it would be very compelling. But yeah, I think that does it. Mike, did you have any names you wanted to just rattle off super quick, or did you get
through
your whole list?
My whole list. Yeah, I think that was awesome. It for me. Oh, and Diego Lopez. But I mean, we could go on and on with this. But you know what? Either way, Mike.
Of course. No, I think. The thing that I think is most glaring from our list,
title fight.
Did we hit?
He's just got the one.
Well, no. That's fine. I think the thing that's most glaring overall is, did we have anyone middleweight or above? We had no middleweight.
We have Fluffy and RDR. Yeah, but you know, I do feel bad. Like, I tried to really comb through the heavyweight, the light heavyweight and heavyweight divisions, but it's like, and a lot of those guys just fought. I mean, you could say Tai Tuivasa, you know, he's always fun and must-see TV, but there is also a criteria to this is winning has to be a big part of this. Every person that we named is on the rise. And that's what intrigues people, is people on the rise. So, and I say that with all due respect to anybody that has things not going their way as of right now, but Yeah, that's a big part of this list that maybe we didn't say is you kind of got to be winning right now.
Yeah, I mean, my list, I look here, I had eight fighters. There's one loss between them all, and it's Tetsuro Taira's loss. So it's like, this is people who are on the upswing. I'm curious if we revisit this like in a year, where these people will be at, and we can maybe update it or go. So let's commit to that. Let's maybe try to do this again around this time next year, Mike. But I always appreciate it. Anything you want to say before I let you go here? No, thanks for the opportunity.
Sorry if I was long-winded. I just love talking MMA, man.
No, I love it. Love having you here, man. It's always great to be by the bonfire. And yeah, we'll see. Are you going to be out in Vegas for 320?
Nope. I'm going to be in Seattle for the Seahawks-Bucks game, but I'm sure I'll see you around.
Oh, yeah. Yes, for sure. We'll do this again soon. Really appreciate it, everyone. Make sure to follow Mike on social media, and I will take a quick break to wrap things up. And that does it for another edition of the Bonfire Podcast. Thank you so much to everyone for tuning in once again for Michael's time here on the show. Always enjoy him. I think he's got a very bright future as a UFC commentator, no doubt an analyst, one of the very best, just so insightful and clearly extremely passionate about this sport. So I really appreciate his time here. Hope you enjoyed the discussion. Would like to know, who did we overlook? Anyone we didn't mention as far as the most intriguing UFC fighters of 2025? Leave a comment. I will try to respond to every single one, as I usually do. I appreciate the support. Please share the show with friends. Give it a like, rate, subscription, follow, anything you can do to boost the numbers and the following of this program here. I'm locked in now that the wedding is behind us. We're going to have some great shows coming up here in the coming weeks and months ahead. Have a lot of fun ideas in mind that I want to roll out. So that does it for now. Appreciate my man Kamikaze Abi Subban for producing the show as always. And until next week, I will see you all back here by the Bonfire.